from Shroud University. This is Russ Brialde bringing you another podcast on the Shroud of Turin, the greatest mystery in the known world.
The Catholic faith does not stand or fall upon the authenticity of the Shroud of Turin as the actual burial cloth of Jesus. All the same, belief that it is the burial cloth of Jesus is taken by many as a miraculous confirmation of their faith. And it has, for many years, been the subject of considerable controversy. Two contributors to that controversy are with us tonight. I would say two of the leading contributors in this country. They are Dr. Walter McCrone, who is resident in Chicago. He is the founder and director of the McCrone Institute, which is a place that has trained thousands of microscopists and forensic scientists over the years. And Dr. Gilbert Lavoie is with us. He's come in from Boston, where he is a practicing physician, but he's also the author of a new book titled Resurrected, The Shroud's Message Revealed 2,000 Years Later. An earlier book by Walter McCrone is titled Judgment Day for the Turin Shroud. Gentlemen, before we get into the controversy, what is in fact the history of the shroud? When do we have historic record of its first appearing? When do we have historic record of its first having been credited as the possible or as the certain shroud in which Jesus was buried? What do we know about that?
Well, we first see the Shroud of Turin coming into Western civilization around 1350. And there it remains. It started in Lyrie, France. The first individual who had it was a Geoffrey de Charny. Unfortunately, the secret of how he got it died with him in battle next to his king. And we've had the shroud. It went from there to Chambéry, France, and then to Turin.
Who is de Charny or de Charny? Is he a soldier, a priest, or what?
He was a knight who mm-hmm. was in battle with was a knight for the king of France, and he developed a church. We put a church together because of the shroud in order to show it, and that was the original time it was shown in France.
And was the claim at the very beginning, around 1350, that this was the authentic burial cloth upon which Jesus's body had left a magical imprint?
That was a claim, I'd say, at that time. However, about 30 years later, there was a bishop, Darcy, who claimed that this was a painting, and that it was he knew the artist who had done it, and from then on. They were allowed to show it, but as not as the actual burial cloth
now,
of Jesus.
Actually, Walter McCrone, in your book, Judgment Day for the Turin Shroud, you mentioned Bishop Darcy and his disclaiming the authenticity of the shroud as the burial cloth.
Yes, he was actually quoting his predecessor, who at the time said he knew the artist who had painted it.
Is that artist identified by name?
Unfortunately not. He didn't give us any credentials or anything. He merely said he knew the artist who had painted it.
And since then, since the 14th century, what has the prevailing opinion been up until recent years?
Well, what happened that made brought interest of scientists became interested in this in 1898, because the first time the shroud picture was taken, a photograph of the shroud mm-hmm. was taken. And when that was taken, the artist, Secunda Pia, an Italian, who an amateur photographer, a lawyer, he took the picture, looked at it, brought his large negative plate to his dark room, and there he saw on the negative plate the positive image of a man. And he asked himself, how could this be a positive image of a man on a negative plate? He thought about it and then realized what was on the original shroud was a negative image. And the question was, how could a negative image get onto an ancient cloth when photography was only invented in the 19th century? So
that's
because
of question.
That, because of that, then scientists became interested.
That's a question to which we will return in a moment. It's a very important question. But just setting the historic record, bringing it up to date, when does the shroud become the Shroud of Turin? That is, when is it displayed in the cathedral at Turin in Italy?
Well, when it went from Lyrie in more or less northern France to Chambéry, it was in a fire, or the chapel it was in suffered a fire. The shroud at that time was folded many times it was in a pack 48 layers thick in a silver box of some sort. And part of the silver box actually melted and burned one corner of that pack. But after that, it was taken to Turin. And that was over about 420 years ago.
And is it claimed from that time on that it is, in fact, the burial cloth of Jesus?
Well, many people have believed that from the very day.
From the very day.
It's such an impressive image that anyone who looks at it is most likely going to think it's real.
When you mentioned the fire and the melting of the metal box it was in, does that account for those strange forms one sees at just about every crosshatch corner?
Yes. There are eight places on the shroud that indicate all of those eight places were the same corner as it was folded, and it actually had to be patched there. And it's charred fibers along one edge as well.
What has the church's position been as to the authenticity of the shroud as the cloth in which Jesus was buried?
Well, all of those that I've talked to firmly believe in its that it is the real shroud of Christ, but they don't openly, the church does not claim that. The Pope personally believes it, but they say that it's a reference, it was allowed to be shown as a representation of the Passion of Christ.
We might as well come to the first challenging question that Gilbert Lavoie has already raised. How do you get a negative image done artistically in the 14th century? You're saying that's impossible.
Yes, I am.
I'm saying it's normal, natural, for an artist to, if he's a true artist and wants to do a shroud image, he has to think. There's no light in a tomb, and he's going to do it with the cloth, with Christ lying on half of a 14-foot-long cloth with the cloth and folded over him. So he ends up with an image of both the back and the front of Christ. And what he had to think was that what could form this image? And so he proceeded based on contact points. Wherever the shroud cloth laid over the face, we'll just deal with the face, wherever it touches, that's where there will be body fluids or some image representation. So wherever there were any high points, he painted those light. And or he painted them dark, really. They would be where it would normally be light if it were a portrait artist, but with contact points, then the cheekbones, the chin, and the nose, and the brow would have paint.
You're saying that would be the artist's way of representing?
Yes.
Were you suggesting in that we have evidence of other shroud paintings done along those lines?
No, I don't know of any other paintings
it's
along
not,
that line.
It's not a common genre.
No.
In the 14th century.
No. But on the other hand, let me add one thing to this, that if he did put paint where there was, where the high points were, that's where a portrait artist would have made it light and dark on either side of the nose and under the eyebrows and so on. So he just accidentally created a negative image.
The counter view held by the faithful, or those who believe in the authenticity of the shroud, is that there was some kind of radiation which from the body, the corporeal body of Jesus, which generated the imprint. Is that right?
I don't know what happened. I don't know how this image got on here, but from the point of view of a negative, you know, when we're dealing with science, science is something where you have to reproduce. If you say I have a theory of how something happened, you have to be able to reproduce it. And isn't it true, Dr. McCrone, I think in November, December of the Biblical Archaeology Review, you have a picture in there of done by your artist.
Right.
I would suggest that people go to the library and get a copy of that and scan it into their computer and then reverse that picture, and you will find that that picture doesn't at all look like a very good picture of someone. No one has been able, even very fine artists who know the shroud, have been actually able to reproduce this, a negative image that then you take that negative image and turn it into a positive. So I think that's a very important point. No one has been able to do that.
I differ with that strongly. An artist here in Chicago, Walter Sanford, did shrouds. I had to educate him to There's no light in a tomb, so just paint contact points. And those are the points where normally it would be light. And he automatically then created the negative image. And his paintings, done as a shroud, if you take a photograph of them, and they're in my book, it comes out a reasonable positive, as good as the one of the shroud itself.
I disagree with that totally. In fact,
it's qualitative judgment, whether it's as good or not.
Well, it's a lot more than qualitative. And one, again, to settle this argument, one should go to the library, get the Biblical Archaeology Review, and scan that into your computer and see the difference.
That's
no one has been able
Herschel Schenck's publication?
Yes, it is. And that's the way to look at this. You have to be objective and see how this is done.
Of course, there are other questions that can be raised. One other very important one, and it's an obvious question. It was to the forefront in the investigations that Walter McCrone was involved in, together with a number of other people who composed a commission of inquiry some years ago, and we'll hear about that shortly. That other question is, what about the cloth? Can we carbon date the cloth? Can we, for that matter, by its fiber, analyze the age of the cloth? And if the cloth isn't at least 1,970 years old at the moment, then or thereabouts, then that in itself would disauthenticate or deauthenticate the claims for the shroud. That's a question we must pursue immediately, and we will do so directly after these words. Another very important aspect of Dr. Lavoie's analysis has to do with the image itself, quite apart from its being negative. You say that could not have been done in a way that would produce a photographic positive that looks so much like the figure that we know. But you also think you find evidence of real blood.
Yes. Dr. Alan Adler, who is an expert in porphyrins, which is a part of the chemistry of bloods, did some sticky tape analysis of the blood and of what would look like blood, and he was determined for sure that that was blood. Other people, since then, other people have also determined that it's blood, including a DNA test that states that this was a man. I mean, from the DNA testing.
Of course, it's quite conceivable if blood is found, that the blood can have some source other than flowing from the body of Jesus of Nazareth.
I'm willing to say categorically and to my dying day that there is no blood on the shroud.
How do you know?
I find the only colored material on the shroud in image areas is red ochre, vermilion, and a gelatin binder.
Now, Dr. Lavoie just mentioned the sticky tape samples. You had the same, did you not?
Yes.
What is sticky tape?
Well, just ordinary magic tape, but the clear type. So that
you put it on the surface, and then you pull it off.
Right.
And you've taken some of the fabric along with
Actually, you take more than they expected. There were over, on each of 32 tapes, there were an average of 1,000 linen fibers from the shroud.
Actual linen fibers?
Yes.
So what did you, back at the McCrone Laboratories, what did you do with those fibers?
Well, I left them on the tape. In fact, what I liked about it was that the tape is taken, then it's pressed down on a microscope slide. The backing is clear, and it makes a fine preparation just as is. So I never had to open them up at all. I looked through the tape backing and at thousands of fibers.
Well, you have fibers, say, colored red, and a believer in the authenticity of the shroud would say that's Jesus' blood.
Mm-hmm.
How do you determine it's not?
Very simply. Blood, and optically, blood has no resemblance at all to paint pigments. Red ochre and vermilion have refractive indices almost 3.0. Blood is about half that, about 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brownish in color and not red once it's been shed for a few minutes or so. There's no resemblance between them. They're non-particulate. Blood is non-particulate. It looks like butter spread on the surface of the cloth. But the pigment particles, and there are billions of them on the shroud fibers, they're little tiny submicron particles right about the limit of the resolution of the light microscope. But they're deep red in color, and their refractive indices are up around 3. And those are the only colored material in the image areas on the shroud. I've done the forensic test that Alan Adler said he did, and I got negative results where he got positive results.
So how do you account for Adler getting the positive results?
He wanted it to be real so badly that he found what would be there if it was real.
Why would he want it? As Dr. Lavoie has told us, he's not a believing Catholic. He's a Jewish fellow.
That's all right. Max Fry did exactly the same thing. He found pollen grains. He couldn't have had more than about 200 pollen grains on all the tapes that he had. And I've seen his tape.
He supposedly found pollen grains from botanical material that dates to historic Israel around 2,000 years ago.
Not only that, but 59 different species.
Yeah.
When he only had 200 in all in a cloth that hadn't been in Palestine at least for 600 years. How he could have done it, I don't know. Wishful thinking.
Dr. Lavoie.
You have to know Alan Adler, the kind of man that he was. He was interested in the truth. He had no belief in miracles at all. This man, it's really unfortunate to say that about Dr. Adler because he wasn't that kind of a person. I knew him very well.
Who was he, in fact?
He was.
I gather he's
a PhD. He's a chemist from Western State. Western Connecticut State College,
mm-hmm.
and was an expert in porphyrins, had done many studies in that over the years. He was an expert in the work on blood. Dr. McCrone is not an expert on the work of blood, and he actually studied this. There's a wonderful article in the journals, and it's tremendously well done. Anybody out there who's interested in science should compare Dr. McCrone's articles to Dr. Adler's articles.
Where does one find Dr. Adler's articles?
If anyone wants to know what they can look up on my website, JesusResurrected.com,
mm-hmm.
and ask the question to my email my agent, and we'll give you information.
We seem to have a clear contradiction,
just a standoff
of interpretations.
Period.
Here.
There's no way
well,
either
I can,
of us
I can,
to convince the other.
There's a lot of things that can. Let's look at the blood on the shroud, and it's very interesting. If you look at the blood marks are, and I have many pictures in the book that show that. This man was definitely taken down from the position of crucifixion, laid on one end of this cloth, and the other end was laid over his body. It's really quite remarkable.
We have analyzed those blood stains, taken them off, put them on the electron microscope, electron microprobe, ion microprobe. They are full of iron and mercury, mercuric sulfide, vermilion, red ochre, iron oxide.
Well, would you say that mercury is a very dense material?
Yes.
They did X-rays of the shroud, and they did not see any sign of mercury over the blood marks.
You have to have enough of it, even though it is a heavy element.
Well,
and there just isn't that much. It's not a paint layer.
Well, let me just say to you that there's probably that blood actually soaks through the cloth. There's probably 1 to 2 millimeters of that at different areas in the cloth. Would that be enough? I think
so. It would not be enough.
Sure,
if you look at that image on the fibers, it's a particle here, another one there, two or three here that are scattered. About 1/25th of the area of the fiber is covered with pigment.
Well, then how can somebody see it? Actually,
it's a very faint image, but you can see it.
It's not a very faint image. The blood marks are not faint. In fact, what they did is they put a light behind the cloth, and the image itself is very faint, but the blood marks aren't. You can see them very, very clearly. In fact, those people that were actually there that saw it, they saw that the blood actually soaks through to the back of the cloth. And if you take all you need is a 0.06 millimeter of something like white lead, which is has the same.
Opacity
to X-rays, okay, as mercury. Actually, it's mercury. The vermilion has a greater opacity.
Do we have any evidence? I can't follow all of this in detail because you two are chemically sophisticated far more than I am, obviously. But do we have any record going back to the 14th century that the blood stains are seen by viewers of the shroud at that time? Or could they have been added later, whether as blood or as... some sort of pigment.
I would accept the idea that they were on there at the time in 1356.
When I first started...
Are they mentioned in an original description?
I don't remember.
Dating back to the 14th century?
Well, let me say this. When I first started looking at this, I was a skeptic. And I really didn't want to accept this at all.
Mm-hmm.
And as time went on, my first visit was to a Dr. Ernst Kitchinger at Harvard, who is one of the world's experts in icons. And I went to him and I said, Doctor, have you seen people, painters, paint blood like this? And he said, no. He says, this Shroud of Turin is actually unique in the world. It does not fit into any artistic category at all. In fact, he said, you can look all you want, but you'll not find it. He says, a group of us who are interested in this subject from around the world believe that the Shroud of Turin is actually the Shroud of Constantinople. And that, and we actually have a history that brings us back to Constantinople. And then we have a history that also brings us all the way back to the first century with regard to...
Well, it should be a Shroud image of Jerusalem.
Right.
In origin, should it not?
Yes, an image that is not made by human hands was known in the East for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a story that goes all the way back. And from the point of view of blood, I think we have to get into some details here. When I first started to look at this, I thought that the blood marks, when I did blood transfers from blood to cloth, and I found at first that they didn't match. And then I realized that I had done my study on a horizontal position. And then I did the study making a transfer to picking up, because the man actually died in the vertical position, mm-hmm. that the blood marks actually did match what I saw after I made the transfer. The pictures are all in the book. It turns out that when Vern Miller, who was a very well-known photographer, scientific photographer, he took pictures, he did it under UV light, and he saw little lines around each blood mark, not everyone, but a lot of the blood marks. And it turns out that that when Adler studied that, he found that those little lines were actually serum albumin. And that's exactly what squeezes out of a blood clot.
I want to understand something. You say that these marks are made not in the horizontal position, but in the vertical position. Jesus was crucified and hung on the cross, but then was taken down, wrapped in the shroud, and taken to the cave-like chamber, and on the third day he rose, according to Scripture. But surely his body was prone when wrapped in the shroud.
Right. So what it is that when blood flows from the body, it flows down, and it at the last flows, it'll be the clotting of that last blood. And that will clot on the body.
So the fact that he hung on the cross for a number of hours after his death.
Just a short period of time after his death, actually, if you read the story.
And what do we have in Scripture on that?
That he had died about 3 o'clock in the afternoon,
yeah.
and he had to be buried before sundown.
Right.
So that left him an hour and a half to really get him
buried. And that's enough time for all the clotting to occur?
Well, the clotting would have occurred very quickly, in about at least within 10 minutes, and then what we call clot retraction would have occurred
mm-hmm.
about 30 minutes, and we would have got these nice, neat clots and these nice, neat transfers.
Do I understand that you claim in your book, Resurrected, that the shroud actually still enshrouds Jesus as he rises at the moment of resurrection?
That's correct. But it took me years to get to that.
How do you come to that?
Well, it turns out that the blood marks that are on the body are that of a man who's actually been laid down on one end of the cloth, the other end of the cloth was laid over him. So the forensics of those blood marks are consistent with that.
We have a front and back image, in
right.
fact.
Yeah. The image itself is not that of a man lying down, but actually that of a man. If you study the shadows on that image and the hair, the way it falls, is that of a man who is actually lifted up, actually upright.
Well, that would suggest that no image was left during the 3 days he was in the cave or in the chamber, but that the image somehow fixes itself on the shroud only as he is rising into the air.
Whatever. I don't know how it got there, but that's what we have.
I'll say only one thing, and that is that for the last 40 years I've worked on paintings. And I know pigments, and I know microscopy, and I say that on the shroud, all of the colored material is either red ochre or vermilion, and there is no blood, period.
When you say you've worked on paintings, I hadn't really mentioned that in the introduction, but you have authenticated and you have demonstrated the...
De-authenticated.
You de-authenticated many paintings by supposed old masters.
Yes.
Among whom were...
Oh, Raphael, any of the Titian and so on.
You've done this for museums and for dealers and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think what we have to do is we have to really look at the shroud, the image itself. We have two phenomena here. One is the blood marks that actually soak through the cloth, mm-hmm. and the other is the image. Now, the image is rather unique. When you look at the image, let's say a 64 times magnification, you see that the image is only on the topmost fibers of the thread. Each thread is made of many, many, many fibers, and these fibers are less than half the diameter of human hair. And it is only the topmost fibers that are yellowed. In fact, if you take a pin and you start pushing them around, you'd find that the yellowing is only about one, maybe two fibers deep. And if you follow that fiber underneath the next cross thread, it goes from yellow to white. That means that no paint, dye, or stain could have caused this image, because otherwise we would have had the wicking as of the material underneath the next cross thread or down into the cloth.
We did have wicking, but it's such a dilute paint.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1/200th the concentration of a watercolor paint, and I find the particles of pigment on all sides of the top fibers.
By the way, do you see this as oil paint done in that form, or as watercolor, or what?
It's a watercolor paint.
It's a watercolor
gelatin
paint.
Base.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, we must pause. I'm quite late for commercials
here.
This is too... And we return in our general discussion. Indeed, it is clearly a debate between two opposed positions, a debate on the authenticity of the Shroud of Turin and the authenticity of the image thereupon, which Gilbert Lavoie is convinced is the image somehow magically or by some unknown method left by the body of Jesus upon, probably at the moment of his resurrection. And to Dr. Walter McCrone, who's quite convinced that it's the work of an artist dating back to probably the 14th century and painted lightly with watercolor kinds of pigments. Dr. McCrone, we will go to the phone in just a moment, 591-7200. Dr. McCrone, the basis, surely, of your dismissal of the shroud as an authentic image left by the cadaver of Jesus is that you simply find no blood. You've said that a number of times. If there were blood, what would be the signs?
Well, blood in the first place is not particulate. It's really a film.
Mm-hmm.
I've put blood on my own blood on a shroud and taped it, and I don't see any particles. Everything has very low refractive indices, and pigments that I do see have very high refractive indices and deep red color. And this is so different from blood that there's no way that they could be confused microscopically.
Could you also go to direct chemical analysis of the material? That is, blood is chemically defined. Its base is hemoglobin. And would you then find traces? Could you track for traces of hemoglobin?
Yes. There are definite forensic tests. I'm a forensic chemist and have used blood detection methods on stains and drips and so on of blood, and those were used by both Alan Adler and myself. I got 1, 2, 3, 4 negative results. He got 1, 2, 3, 4 positive results.
Now, who is this fellow Adler? Dr. Lavoie's already answered. Did you know him?
Yes, I knew him.
Was he? What was his discipline or his training? A chemist also?
Not so much chemist as he was a chemist, but more in biological areas than.
Mm-hmm.
My areas of...
How do you account for his findings?
I find his findings like that of many of the other people who have worked on the shroud, that they want it to be real. And they feel that it is real. They are so convinced that it's real that then there would be blood there. So they get positive tests.
Did you ever have occasion to discuss it with Adler?
Yes. And he differs with me, but... his tone of voice was quite different, and I could see that he was feeling rather awkward about it.
Is Adler still with us, or is he?
Adler just recently passed away.
He did.
Just a couple of weeks ago.
That recently?
That's right, yes. Adler was a very compulsive scientist, and he spent his life, he did a lot of papers on the biological sciences and worked with, as I mentioned to you, porphyrins, which is part of blood, mm-hmm. makes up blood. So he was really an expert in this. And Dr. McCrone is not an expert in blood, in the biological sciences.
You said that
sciences.
Before. Walter McCrone is. Is that a fair statement about you?
I'm an expert in finding blood on cloth. There's no way I would miss it if it was there.
I'm sorry, but Dr. Adler, I really believe his work, and I think that you missed it. One of the things that could have happened, one of the things you've mentioned is that you looked at these with the under the tapes on the glass, and I learned from Adler that the tapes actually have an effect on what you're looking at and cause a different refraction, a light refraction, that he actually took off these fibers from the tapes and then washed it with toluene and took away all that refractory material so that he could look at it directly. And he actually did the blood test directly, and he actually did it looking at the porphyrins and proved it without a doubt that it's blood.
It is.
He's got to read his paper. I mean, that's.
It wouldn't help. Back. I've looked at the tapes. I've seen thousands of them.
You should read
them.
His paper. It's absolutely phenomenal. Anybody interested in science or good science should read Dr. McCrone's paper.
Well, there are such things as scientific disagreements. I work in a peripheral area of science. I'm merely a social psychologist. I know one fellow who spent 20 years trying to disagree with and trying to demonstrate that some early findings of mine, which I think were of some significance, are untrue. Lots of people have pointed out to him that he's simply using the wrong methods and he's making the wrong arguments and he's not taking into account the evidence that I put forward. I don't mean to.
It can happen.
But it happens in all areas of science, in all areas of scholarship. There are going to be disagreements.
Mm-hmm. Other people have also found blood on the shroud. And also,
who else has found blood on the shroud?
There's a group out of Texas that did DNA testing on it, as I mentioned to you. They found that this was the blood of a man.
Do you know about this group out of Texas, Walter?
Yes. There's plenty of DNA on the shroud.
How does that happen?
All kinds of things, from mice and from birds and from people handling it and fingerprints. I don't know what they'd get if they tried to clone something from it.
A mere human hand handling the shroud would leave DNA evidence?
Yes, yes.
Just from sweat or something of the sort?
Yeah, skin cells.
Yeah, interesting.
I can't disagree with that. What I do disagree with is when you look at the shroud and you look at it from a medical forensic point of view, in other words, there's something looking at something from a microscopic point of view, and you also can look at it from the gross point of view, in other words, looking at the entire person.
One question from a skeptic, if I may put this one directly to you, Gilbert Lavoie. You would agree, of course, that there was much faking of relics and of miraculous objects during the Middle Ages on to the Renaissance and possibly beyond, and that the churches of Europe, particularly of Italy, are filled with such material.
I agree that that's true, that there's been much faking. That there was truly a crucified man that was placed in this cloth. You can tell by looking at the blood marks, the forensics of it. There's
and yet you say that those marks did not register until the moment of resurrection.
No. Let's not talk about
clear.
Let's stay away from the moment of resurrection here. Let's talk about the science that we're looking at.
All right.
Because I didn't talk about that or think about that until many, many years after I studied
it. But it's in your book.
It's in my book because I've spent 20 years and I found it's at the end of the book.
All right.
And but the fact is that I first had to convince myself that truly was a crucified man under this cloth. And I did that by looking at all different kinds of angles regarding the blood marks, the image, and the history of burial customs and so forth. And the major thing is that when you look at the blood again, you see this actual ring of serum that's around the blood. There is no painter in the world that could create that. You actually can see it on the cloth itself. You can see it on UV light that fluoresces and shows the ring. You can actually see it. When they did the sticky tapes, they actually found these fibers, mm-hmm. and they tested them, and they tested it specifically for serum albumin, and that's exactly what that would be.
Well, now, Walter, what about the ring of serum around the reputed blood?
My paint does the same thing. It's a gelatin ring, and no question about it.
All right. We've gone about as far as we can go in terms of your separate views. But let us...
Yeah, if you had boiled that in oil and so forth... you would have really destroyed the blood marks, and you would have definitely destroyed the image, because as Dr. Mm-hmm. McCrone, if you believe it's a painting, the image is very susceptible to water and humidity, because gelatin is that right,
yes.
Dr. McCrone, very susceptible to water. And
water would dissolve the image.
It would dissolve the image, mm-hmm. exactly. So in that particular situation. But I like to add a little bit to that. And one of the points that Dr. McCrone just said, water would dissolve the image. We had in the fire in 1532, water did get thrown on the image. And for us to sort of resolve this issue, painting or not painting, one would have to look at the image. It's a matter of people actually looking at the image itself and seeing that those areas where the water got onto the image at the knees, at the chest, at the back, that the image has not been destroyed at all, but it remains intact, which proves that this is not a gelatin painting.
Wait a minute. The image is soluble. It's a gelatin base. It is soluble in water. And on the chest, where there is a more or less square area, where water did hit it. It didn't hit very much of the shroud, just in a few places. And you can see that mark around it. That mark is the image material that migrated out with the water as it soaked in.
I agree that you do see that type. What that happens to be, I looked into that. What those are under X-rays, those are calcium rings. That cloth is full of calcium, and that ring that you see is calcium. There may be some iron in that ring also, but the image itself, and people, you have to look at the image, and you'll see that it remains intact in spite of the fact water got on it.
Gentlemen, with that, let us go quickly to another caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to make... Now, these points all kind of like rotate and come into one thought, but the first one is I haven't heard anybody mention the thumbs, that when you look at the image as the hands are crossed, the thumbs are underneath, and this is consistent to what happens when you get nailed through the wrist. All of the people at that time in the 11th and 12th and 13th centuries, when McCrone thinks this was painted, thought Jesus was nailed through the palms and through the feet. The Romans nailed them through the wrist. Second, all of the images going back to the Byzantine history, when Byzantium first came into being, like in the 4th century AD with Constantine, are the Pantocrator. He's consistent in dozens of places. Like all of the images of the Pantocrator have the hair shorter on one side, the twin peak beard, the long nose, the long face. Roman images of the original Jesus were of a classical youth, and only when this image came over from Byzantium, and it's always the same guy, it's always the same face, and there are literally dozens of hair, beard, nose, eyes. It's consistent with...
So you are suggesting then that the shroud is what?
I'm sorry?
What are you suggesting the shroud, in fact,
I'm
is
saying that
in
there's
its origin?
More evidence that the shroud is, in fact, authentic, and that the scientific method that McCrone is using, as he's found it to be false, and is ignoring the items that lead you to believe that something is wrong with carbon dating or something is wrong with the evidence that says that it's not. Also, if he's looked at art from that time, let him name to me which artist could have painted that. If you look at artists from the 13th and 14th century, not the High Renaissance, that's the 15th century. Who could have painted that? What they did looked like four-year-olds. They didn't even know blood flowed then. How could they have painted this image? Who could have painted that image at that time?
Let's get a response from Walter McCrone on that.
In my book, I list about six artists at the
Name
time.
Name one, sir. Jean Clouet? Who?
No, I can't think of the name of the one.
Please, name one. Yeah, you've
don't,
been in art
don't,
for
don't
all
press,
that time.
Sir, don't press as if you're in a courtroom. Be a little courteous and a little
okay.
calm. We'll proceed with that. But if you make this into an inquisition, you're just going to rouse tension and deflect the possibility of our generating any light. Mm-hmm. In fact, I will thank you for the call, and it is time for us to pause for some commercials. Walter, you're free to consult your own book while we go through those commercials. Hello, are you there?
I've been a follower of the information on the Shroud for years. Personally, I happen to believe that it is authentic from everything that I've read, and I've tried to weigh both sides of the story or the facts and findings. Unfortunately for me, I came into the program late in it, and I wanted to question the carbon dating. Perhaps this has been covered already, but my question about that was, I had read that because the Shroud had been exposed to two different fires, there was a very good possibility that the date given by the carbon testing would have been off. It would not have been correct, and that would therefore explain why there would be a difference in the supposed age of the cloth versus, let's say, a 2,000-year period, which it would have had it been cloth that had covered someone who had died at the time that Christ did. Is that true? Did I get that right?
Nobody has been able to confirm that theory that heat would change the dating of the cloth. In fact, when they carbon date that linen, they actually burn it to carbon dioxide and then reprecipitate it as graphite. And that doesn't change the date, so I don't think a little warming up in Chambéry did anything to it.
And may I hear from the other gentleman on the panel, please, who seems to take the opposite view of the authenticity of the Shroud?
Well, with regard to this point, I agree with Dr. McCrone. With regard to the sampling, if you were late, what it is that they only took one sample. Their protocol asked for six samples, and that one sample has been shown in 1996 that is chemically different than the rest of the cloth. Therefore, it is not representative of the rest of the cloth. The scientific literature in carbon dating demands more than one sample, and unfortunately, they only had one. And so that the carbon dating is now void because of a poor sampling technique.
Well, that just reinforces what I was, in my simple-minded insistence, urging earlier. Somebody ought to get to the authorities who control the Shroud and get their permission to take another snip or two out of it.
I was thinking maybe Bolt, Mulcrone, and Adler were both right. When that strip was cut into three pieces, maybe Mulcrone got the part where there was paint on it from where the painters used to touch their brushes on the Shroud to get inspiration from the Shroud, and maybe Adler got a piece where there was blood on it, and maybe if they would have exchanged the pieces of cloth they had, they might have actually agreed with each other. And I'd also like you to talk about the holographic or three-dimensional quality of the image on the Shroud.
Does it have holographic three-dimensional quality?
Well, the Shroud, when you place it under a VP8 image analyzer, it has a three-dimensional relief, which is very unusual, even photographs.
What does that mean, the three-dimensional
relief? Well, you get a three-dimensional, you can see the face as in the body as a three-dimensional image.
It's a body contact sort of print or topographical map.
Uh-huh.
All the contact points show, and those would be dark on the Shroud, but it would be a good topographical map. And they had actually did. Jumper and Jackson did actually produce a sort of a statue, bas relief of Christ's face from the Shroud.
Mm-hmm. Who are Jumper and Jackson?
They were at the Air Force Academy in Colorado. And many years ago, 25 years ago, they did this work with an image analyzer in their computer,
mm-hmm.
and came out with a 3D image.
Now then, we've got a number of lines available. If you've been trying to reach us, try again quickly.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Somebody else has analyzed and found blood, and they also have gone farther to say this was type AB blood.
Yeah.
Now, how can we get that out of pigment?
Who did that?
I don't know.
I'm a Bologna.
His name was Bologna. Literally. I mean, he's an Italian criminalist, and he typed the blood and typed my red ochre and found it was type AB.
But it's not red ochre, it's blood. There's
who is Bologna?
He's a professor of in Italy. I don't know him personally.
Uh-huh. Sounds to me like an awful lot of people are getting into the act on this thing. I guess that's been true for some time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in fact, there were about 30 scientists who actually studied the cloth, and Dr. McCrone has the position of being one of the only ones that said it's a fake.
From Shroud University, this is Russ Brialt. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast, and we hope you stop back from time to time and see what else is new. Also, check out Shroud University itself with all kinds of videos, audios, video blogs, and pretty much everything you can think of related to the Shroud of Turin, the greatest mystery in the known world.